Okay, this is Nick Dylan interviewing Robin Jordan. It is February 22nd, approximately 5:30 p.m., and we'll be discussing her life in regards to the LGBTQ plus Southwest Virginia History Project. How are you doing today, Robin?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you today?
I'm pretty well, thank you.
Good.
So can you tell me a little bit about yourself, your history here, and your place in the LGBTQ plus community?
Well, I didn't grow up here. I actually grew up in Lynchburg, and Martha and I moved to South Carolina for her to go to graduate school, and then to Memphis, Tennessee, where she worked for a while before she got sick, and I finished getting my degree, and we moved here to Roanoke. I heard a lot about Roanoke growing up, and when we were still living in Lynchburg in the 70s, we did used to occasionally come up to the park. There would usually be a group of us that would get in a car and all drive up together and spend an evening at the park, because there wasn't any place else back then. So as far as a place in the community, when we first moved here, there wasn't a whole lot going on except for the Metropolitan Community Church and bar life. Even though we were both atheists, we decided to go to the church because we're definitely not bar people. I can't stand being around smoke. And at that time, we didn't have smoking laws for indoors, so it was just, you couldn't bear to be around places like bars, you know, back then. So we got connected with the Metropolitan Community Church. We don't still go, but we still have friends that we met in the church. We don't know a whole lot of people, but we're still friends with some people we met a long time ago, and periodically we do meet some new people.
So would you say that Martha and then the Metropolitan Community Church were your ties to Roanoke? I mean, you weren't from here.
No, I wasn't from here, but we did move back here when I got a job here in Roanoke. We wanted to leave Memphis, and we were pretty far away from our parents at that time. Both of our parents still lived in Lynchburg, although right before we moved back, Martha's mother died, and my father had cancer, and I didn't like being so far away, and didn't want to keep working where I was working. Because we didn't want to stay there forever. So I applied for jobs here and got a position here in Roanoke. And so we've been here since 1989.
That's amazing. So you got here, like you got the job, and then you came back and you've been here since 1989,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
About when did you arrive in Roanoke for the first time?
It was August 1st, 1989, was when I drove up. Martha was already here because her mother had just died, and she was with her father in Lynchburg and spending some time with him. And so my brother-in-law, actually my parents, flew him down to Memphis, and he helped me load up the truck after I was successful with my interview. He helped me load up the truck and drive it up, and it was... Actually, it was my birthday we drove up. I'd started my first day of work on August 1st, so it was my birthday that we drove up. Before that, it was quite a way to spend a birthday, I tell you. Driving everything you own up from Memphis to Roanoke.
That has to be an experience.
Yeah, and we didn't get to move into the apartment right away, because the tenants, the landlord who owned the apartment, lived next door to the house. We rented a house in Salem. And as a matter of fact, if you're on West 4th Street, it is the only house on West 4th Street. So it was quite interesting. But we rented this house, and he found out after the tenants had moved out that he had a very bad bug problem and didn't want us to move in until he finished treating for bugs and everything. My parents were on a trip, and I used to commute back and forth from Lynchburg every day for a couple of weeks because I had to wait for weekends to have time to try to get the house so we could live in it. And so it was kind of odd that we did that. We moved kind of slowly. It took a little time to be able to move into the house. So for the first few weeks, probably 3 weeks, I commuted every day from Lynchburg to Roanoke and then back again.
Oh, wow. That's a really long commute.
Yeah, that made for a long day.
Did you ever feel that, you and Martha were living together? I mean, and Martha mm-hmm. is your wife. So, well,
partner. Yeah.
So, do you ever feel that when you came to Roanoke that you any opportunities or jobs passed you by because y'all were living together? I mean, did you feel any sense of discrimination?
Probably not so much here. I kind of didn't know how much I could say to coworkers and stuff. I remember when I very first started, one of my coworkers asked me what my relationship with Martha was. And I didn't really know what to say because I didn't know him. And Martha was really sick at the time. I mean, it was not really like having a partner per se at the time. She was she didn't ever know what was going on. And so I told him that we were like sisters, which we were kind of by that time, kind of like sisters in a way. And when you're a lesbian feminist, you think of other women as your sisters. So it seemed like not a totally dishonest answer at the time, but I didn't have any problems exactly at work, and I worked for the state of Virginia, and they came out with a policy that as far as discrimination and harassment and stuff like that included they don't allow you to harass people for their sexual orientation. So actually for work, it didn't seem to be a problem. And we've probably had less trouble here than anywhere else that we've lived. I think partly is because time has gone by. You know, when we first lived together, it was a whole lot more trouble than it seems like it's been here.
So you would consider Roanoke being one of the more friendly places that you...
Yeah, I've been really glad that this is where we ended up.
So when you've been here, you mentioned that, like, the park, it was either the park or the Metropolitan Community Church.
Well, there were a couple of bars in town. The park being one of them, or the Metropolitan Community Church. We just didn't find any other groups. But then later we found out about PFLAG, and we were associated with PFLAG for a while, and even gave a presentation one time. We were guest speakers at one of the PFLAG meetings as a long-term lesbian couple, and so we did go to those meetings some.
So it seems to me that your identity here, Roanoke, is not really specifically the fact that you're lesbian or however you identify. I don't want to make an assumption, but you think here it's just you could be like any other couple, right?
Well, we've always been at least somewhat out. And yeah, we have identified ourselves as a lesbian couple.
I mean, in labels.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting, and I think I would just like to hear more about, your time in Roanoke. So you got your job here.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us what you do?
Well, I'd rather not disclose the department that I work for, but I do. Trying to think of how to put it that won't disclose it. I tried to think of this ahead of time, actually, and I thought I came up with something that I could say. I do a job that's involved with science and really love it. And so it involves a lot of math and a lot of science.
Okay, well, that's a good answer. There's wrong way to answer it.
Yeah.
Now, you said that you have a few LGBTQ plus friends mm-hmm. and people you associate with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see them in like similar positions? Do you notice any kind of niches that form in the community that you might identify with?
Well, we have one of our friends has actually worked at the Council for Community Services, and they serve a lot of the LGBTQ community. They do AIDS testing, and they're open to people working there that are LGBTQ. So, he's had and we visited there, and I think that he definitely has a positive experience working in Roanoke. His partner doesn't work in Roanoke, but works in another close by city, and I don't really know what it's like at work, but it tends to be manufacturing jobs. And I don't know really what his experience is. You know, when he's away from work, I think when he's home, he's just not at work, and that's a good thing. Huh?
Right, I think we all think that, don't we?
Yeah.
So, in the Southwest Virginia community, it's not just Roanoke,
mm-hmm.
but did y'all ever get to travel any other places besides Roanoke? Where, in college, for example,
mm-hmm.
did you have any interactions here for college or really anything else?
Well, we went to, both of us, I started off at community college. My parents didn't have money to send me to a four-year school, and my mother put me through community college and the rest of my schooling on her cafeteria job, so but it's kind of funny, I ended up working with people who had the same kind of job as people who went to Ivy League schools, so it really ended up not making any difference in the end as far as that went. I got just as good a job for my education. I'm trying to remember exactly what the question was.
Sorry, I probably didn't make it clear.
No, you did, but I kind of wandered off.
No, that's okay.
You were asking maybe about other places that we've lived, what the experience has been like.
You said that Roanoke was the most open.
Yeah, I think it was in a lot of ways. I think when we lived in Memphis, we knew we knew people who were gay in Memphis, and that wasn't, it wasn't bad there. We were pretty out there as well. South Carolina is a little bit of a different story, but we lived there. I remember when we first moved there, we drove down to look at the Capitol. There's this flag flying on the top of the Capitol building. It's a rebel flag. And we're like, what the hell have we gotten into, But it was strange living there. It was so different from anything else we'd ever experienced. It was the first time we'd actually gotten out of Lynchburg. You know, we were so happy to get out of Lynchburg. But to get into, it was strange because at that time in South Carolina, it was like nobody, there were a lot of racial issues going on, but nobody really discussed them or anything. So being kind of that backward as far as racial issues, you can imagine how backward it was as far as any other kind of issues, you know. I don't remember specifically having problems except for a landlord we had. Our first landlord. turned out that he was somewhat of a crook, and he had a bunch of different housing, and he had this thing, we did not know this until, what he did was, he had a thing called InstaRent, and we just got this regular way, you know, answering an ad in the newspaper, but he did have this promise that he would give to people that if you would pay him a certain amount of money, he would have you in a rental, in one of his rental properties within a very short period of time. And what he did was, he had papers sitting in the courthouse with renters' names on it that for eviction notices, that all he had to do was go and sign them, and he'd get people evicted like that. And then he could move other people into the rental property. Well, we fortunately only had a 3-month lease, but when we moved in, we found out there were odd things there, like if you could not get the water or electricity, it was all one, all of the utilities was in a public utility, not like private things, like, you know, it was all a public utility. And if the previous tenant didn't pay their bill, you could not get your utilities cut on until you covered their bill. So we had to pay all of this money just to get our electricity cut on. And then it turned out part of the house didn't even have electricity. It was just, and so we couldn't, and we never could get a hold of him again. The number we had called in to answer the ad and to meet him and sign the lease was disconnected. He had no other way to get in touch with him. He did not have an address. When you sent the rent in, everybody that deposited the rent deposited it in somebody else's mailbox, and he'd come around and pick them up. So you couldn't find him. You could never find him again. And he would, when we went to move, we found one of the people I worked with had a rental house, nice rental house, and somebody was moving out, and he was looking for somebody to move in. Worked out great for us. So we tried to get a hold of the landlord to get our deposit money back. And being at the University of South Carolina, Martha was able to use the legal department there. You know, they'd have law students who would work on problems as practice. And so we were telling him we couldn't find our landlord to talk to him about getting our deposit back and, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And we were moving out before the last month, and, you know, we thought maybe we could pay the last month's rent and get our deposit and get out. He had the hardest, and he used to be a investigative reporter before he went to law school. He had the hardest time finding this guy. And when he did, he found out about all of this InstaRent stuff, and he found that he had our names ready to evict at any moment and all of this kind of stuff. But when he was able to speak, he found out who this guy's lawyer was and spoke. So he spoke to this guy through the guy's lawyer. And that guy said, at this time I was working water plants at this time, which involved having a state license to be a water plant operator. And if you have a state license, you could lose it if you were not in compliance with every state law there was, including the law against homosexuals. So he could have, if he wanted to, he could have, he threatened this, he could have reported us and had my state license taken away and made me lose my job. So he was threatening to do that.
And then is that part of the reason why y'all left South Carolina?
Well, no. We left when Martha found a job.
That's so just...
But, yeah, that's the... No. It was amazing. South Carolina had odd laws. They don't have... their court system doesn't include small claims. They don't have small claims court. So if we wanted to try to get our money back from him later, we would have to wait until it came up on the circuit court docket, which, to the best of this guy's knowledge, we would have had to come back to South Carolina probably in about a year and a half or so. And everything was stacked in favor of the landlords. Different states are different like that.
That's insane.
I know.
So y'all came back to Roanoke when Martha found the job.
I found the job in Roanoke. We moved to Memphis when Martha found a job.
Okay. So y'all moved to Roanoke when you found the job.
Yes.
My job.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I guess comparing that to South Carolina, did you ever feel like the environment, the laws, or just the places in Roanoke, like, were not really accepting, or what's the word?
I can't remember having any specific problems in Roanoke. Maybe Martha will remember some that I haven't thought of, but. We did kind of worry when we moved out where we are now, because it's very rural, and we live in an extremely redneck neighborhood, and so we were a little bit worried when we first moved out there, you know, what might happen to us. When we were at when we used to go to the church, there were two women in the church who had problems in their neighborhood, country neighborhood, and so we were a little bit worried that maybe we would have problems. But our next door neighbor was just really nice, and everybody, you know, after a while we seemed to be got accepted into the community. And our next door neighbor was up seeing us one day about something, and his wife said, "I just want y'all to know, you don't need to worry about anything. We all know you're gay. Nobody cares." And she said, "My brother's gay."
Well, I'm glad y'all had a really good time. I mean,
yeah.
Is there anything about Roanoke that you just like, you believe that made it more accepting than South Carolina or any other place?
Well, it's weird. You would expect a university city to be more advanced or more liberal or something, but I don't know. I think Roanoke's just, I mean, golly, they had a black mayor long before we ever moved here. I don't know. If you look, like, after the elections, if you look at the election maps that show what different areas, how they vote, Roanoke is always very liberal. You know, there'll be this little blue dot in the middle of all this red stuff. So, you know, not having grown up here, I don't really know how it exactly started being like that, because Lynchburg certainly isn't like that.
It's interesting, because since you're not from Roanoke, I think you come in with a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if it wasn't, I'm glad that there weren't any problems. But were there any experiences that just like made you fall in love with Roanoke, if you have?
I'll tell you what. Memphis is as flat as it can be. The river is super cool. I mean, going down and seeing the Mississippi is one of the coolest things. If you visit Memphis, there is so much to see and so much of a cultural experience, you know, like that's where the blues were born, and that's where... We weren't Elvis fans, really, but still, you know, there's a lot of that kind of rock and roll history and music history and just the culture of the river, taking riverboat rides. It's fun to visit there, but it was very odd living there because it wasn't really like a southern city like what we were used to. We've never lived outside the South, and it was almost like it was more of a northern city. But the first thing that came into my head every single morning when I would wake up was, you know, I'd wake up and it was the beginning of the day and I'd kind of open my eyes and stretch and I'd think, oh, there's no mountains here. I grew up around the mountains. And that was my favorite thing to do as a little kid, was the days my parents would take drives up on the Blue Ridge Parkway. And I just love the mountains. I used to tell my mother, you know, oh, when I grow up, I want to have a house on the side of a mountain, you know, and that kind of thing. So moving here, and there's all of these mountains, there's a hill behind my house. You remember that hill?
Mm-hmm.
There's a hill up there, and in the winter, I mean, of course, when there's leaves on the trees, you can't do it. But in the winter, if you're up there, you can stand in one place and just turn around, and there are mountains everywhere you look. Just, there they are. I'm surrounded with them.
So it's like a dream come true.
It is. It is.
Well, were y'all completely surrounded by mountains where you grew up?
No, I could see mountains, but I remember sometimes sitting in my bathroom at home when I was a little kid and looking out the window and wishing I could see a mountain out of that window. Because the mountains, you could see them from Lynchburg, but they were not right on top of you. I knew they were close by. And when Martha and I were still living in Lynchburg, I would get off from work and we would hastily pack a picnic sandwich, you know, and take the dog, and in 35 minutes we could be up on the parkway and we'd hike up a trail and stop somewhere and eat our picnic dinner and, you know, hike back. And I remember we used to like to stop at a place on the parkway and watch the sunset. It was just being out in the... we missed it because when we lived in Lynchburg before we moved away, in our 20s when we were still living in Lynchburg, we used to backpack. And we had missed that so much.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we weren't physically... Martha especially wasn't physically able to do that anymore, but still, just being able to get out in them and hike on the trails and that kind of thing. And I'm such a nature person. I like being outside more than anything. One of my first memories when I was a little kid was... This sounds really silly, but you know how little kids are. And I'm an atheist now, but I grew up, you know, in a religious family. And I remember just, you know, being in my bedroom and I'd hear the doves. There was a steep hill and woods and everything all around us in the backyard, and it wasn't far from the James River. You could see the river in the winter through the trees. And I remember the doves calling, and I could hear them out there, and they were just, ooh, 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 ooh. And I thought, that's God calling me to go into the woods.
So you feel at home here?
Yeah, I felt like I came home.
That's wonderful. So yeah. that begs the question then. So you've known Martha for how long now?
50 years.
How did y'all meet?
In high school.
I mean, you were from Lynchburg.
Yes.
And Martha was from Roanoke, was she?
Well, she was, when she's lived, her father worked for Appalachian and traveled around the state. In this kind of region. You know, they lived in Lynchburg and Roanoke and Collinsville. But in this region anyway. And he had an opportunity at one time when she was in high school to move to Alaska. And they seriously discussed this as a family. But I don't know why the decision was made not to take them up on the Alaska move. Maybe he was just getting older and didn't want to make that big a move anymore. I don't really don't know. But she was, so she lived in Lynchburg when she was small and in Roanoke when she was small. And then before she went to high school, she was in Collinsville, and then they moved back to Lynchburg. So, that's where I met her. They moved back, I think, when she started the 8th grade, but I met her first day of school in the 10th grade, but that wasn't the first time I saw her. I saw her the year before. She says I stalked her. I was out in the hall one day from homeroom, and I saw this girl walking down the hall, and I thought, I really like her. I'd like to be her friend. And let me tell you, I'm like one of the shyest people. It's a good thing you came and visited with me, you know, before we went to do this, because I would have had a harder time because I'm really shy. This isn't normal for me. But I thought, I'd really like to be her friend. Whatever it is that's really different about me, I think she's like that too. I didn't know what it was. We'd never heard of lesbians or anything, you know, back then. We were totally innocent. But the next day I went out in the hall to see if I could figure out where she came from, because she kind of disappeared through the crowds, you know. And so I thought, well, you know, she didn't show up in that part of the hall. And so I thought, the next day I thought, well, maybe she's coming up the staircase over here. Or the next day I thought, staircase over there, you know. And I kept trying to see her again, and I never saw her again that year. And so the first day of school in 10th grade, I walked into my English class, and there she was, sitting in a seat with an empty seat in the front of the row right in front of her. And I just walked right over and plopped into that seat, and I turned around and I said, hi. And she was shy too, although she's not as shy as I am, but she said she just, you know, didn't know why I was coming up and talking to her, but made her feel really shy. And she kind of put her head down and went, hi. And so I tried to get her talk. I said, I like your pocketbook. Thank you. And she just did her head down again, like she was just not really sure she should talk, you know. But I finally got her to talk to me, and the next thing I knew, she invited me to come over and visit for the day. And I remember my mother, you know, that morning I woke up, and she said, you were really excited about going to your friend's house today, you know. And I said, yes, I am. So that we always, that's one of our anniversaries that we like to celebrate. Well, I kind of started it, I guess, because I'm the romantic of us two. And so the first day of school, sometimes Martha will forget. I will always take off. Back then, we didn't do school before Labor Day. So I would always, at work, I would often take off the day that would be the first school day after Labor Day. Usually it's like Salem City Schools, they do that day, you know. And I would take the day off, and I'd say, let's go downtown, and I'd surprise her at lunch or breakfast or something with a little gift, and she'd say, why are you giving me this? I'd say, we met on this day. So anyway, this last day of school, this last first day of school this past fall, it was 50 years ago.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
So after, this was high school, so y'all didn't go to the same college?
No, but, like I said, I stayed home for 2 years to go to community college, but when it was time to, and my parents always told me I was going to have to go to a state school. They couldn't afford to send me anywhere else. So I was looking up in catalogs, seeing all the state schools, and I noticed, wow, this one's only 8 miles from Bridgewater. So that's the one I applied to, and that's the one I got into.
Did you apply to that school because Martha was going to Bridgewater?
Yeah. Yeah, and it seemed like the right size. Larger state schools like UVA or Tech, or although back then it was called DPI, they all seemed kind of big, intimidating to me. Martha went to a very small school, but this one was it seemed like it was one that I could, you know, it didn't intimidate me. So it worked out pretty well, except for the, I wanted to be a biologist, and it, I had no idea that this biology department was actually a pre-med biology course, and I didn't even realize that until last year. It's so weird. I always wondered why biology was so strange there. But then I was talking to somebody about it last year, and they said, well, you know, that's a pre-med course. And I'm going, oh, yeah. That would explain that girl that sat down next to me in class and looked over at me in first day of school and looked over at me and said, do I smell like cadaver?
That is hilarious. Well, so if you were going to a school 8 miles from Bridgewater,
mm-hmm.
were you and Martha talking still?
Yeah, and we would spend weekends together.
Okay.
And that was, it was during that period of time that we started sleeping together. We liked each other a lot, you know. We enjoyed being with each other a whole lot. But we kind of thought we'd made all of this up. We thought we'd kind of invented it, you know.
How did you, like, come to understand? I know that there weren't as many resources available. How did you figure out in quotations that who y'all were proved to have other people around you that were the same?
Well, Martha was doing a term paper in one of her sociology classes. It was a minority relations class. And she didn't want to do a minority that everybody else was doing, that was a popular minority. There is one, but, you know, it is just like, you know, she knew nobody would pick homosexuals. And so she thought, well, I'll pick homosexuals. Nobody else will pick them, you know. I'll be the only one. So it was odd because she had to try to find books in the library, and she found a few books in the card catalog, but they were never on the shelves. And she figured, you know, they can't possibly all be checked out for this long. So she finally went to the librarian and asked, why aren't these books ever on the shelves? And she looked at them and she said, well, they're locked in a vault. You can't have them. So Martha's professor ended up having to get them out for her. And they were terrible books. They were from the 30s and 40s and 50s. And, you know, it was just, the information was very outdated. And so she had found out there was a gay student union in Charlottesville. And her professor offered to drive us over there for the meetings. So they gave her some names of people she could write to, and she began writing, and we began collecting a whole lot of information. I mean, at that time, there were still some of the really old gay newspapers that were still being published, and some of the old lesbian newspapers that were still being published way back in those, you know, early 70s. And so she was getting all the stuff. And I mean, we met people from, you know, some of the people that were activists way back in that time. We had phone numbers of people that they were nationally known, you know, that we could call them up and talk to them and stuff like that. But when she was first trying to get all this information together, and we'd been looking at, you know, she'd write to one person and they'd give her another few names she could write to, and those people would give her a few more names. And so we were beginning to get this collection of information. And I remember we were sitting on the floor one night and we had it all spread around us, and we sort of looked at each other and we said, you know, I think this is about us. So that's how we figured it out. But what was good about it was all of this information, instead of like the books that had been in the library, this was all positive information. This was from people who were activists and people who believed that they should be free to love who and how they wanted. And so it was good, I think, in a way that we ended up with very positive information about ourselves. And that's how we started out. And I'd already, you know, moved in with Martha and had told my parents that I loved Martha and that if she was a man, I would want to marry her, you know, and all this stuff, and still had no clue.
How do you feel like knowing just all this new information at the time changed your relationship with Martha? Do you think it did?
I think that's kind of an interesting question. I never really thought about that. I think it probably did in a way, because we began to not feel isolated. We knew there were other people out there. We knew there was a culture out there that we could be a part of. And I think that we didn't feel that way before. We didn't know anybody else like us. Or that anybody else like us even existed. So that was a revelation that I think did make a difference.
Do you think that it helped you, I guess I don't want to say go through life more easily, but do you think it made you less scared? How did you feel?
Well, it still was a little scary that people might find out, you know, because there still were, for instance, later when we moved to South Carolina, the consequences of if someone found out that, you know, I had a state license and yet I was a homosexual, which was against the law, you know, to have a state license, boy, they really had some leverage over hairdressers, you know, because they had to have state licenses. I imagine that a lot of hairdressers, because there are, you know, a fair representation of homosexuals, gay men and possibly gay women and who are hairdressers, and I feel like it probably they probably felt really worried about their livelihood as well. It's hard to feel like someone has that much leverage over your life, I think.
Well, did you use, like, any of the resources? Like, I mean, you've told me about your relationship with the Metropolitan Community Church.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the bars, well, here in Roanoke. Do you feel that those, I'm going to say, tools helped you? I mean, meet new people or just come to accept it and, like, live your life?
I think it's important to have other people in your life who are gay and lesbian. I really do. And as time went on, we began to know some transgender people. And I think just having that diversity of acquaintances and knowledge of people out there is important for a sense of community.
So I'm curious, well, after finding out this information and just where you are now, if you had to look back on your experiences in Roanoke, in South Carolina, in all the places that you've been, can you talk to me about how you think it'd be different now if you had to go through it all over again?
Like today?
Yes.
Well, I think to begin with, I think that knowing that there's hatred out there might make it harder because, I mean, I've read books by people who grew up later than we did and grew up with a self-loathing that we didn't know when we were younger and ended up self-mutilating because they felt like they should be punished for the feelings they were having and whatnot. And we never went through that. And I think that also having the more positive resources out there more readily available, and I think that that can help overcome it. But I think it's a real, I just don't understand why people hate so much. You know, why do people want to hate people who don't do anything to them? I don't understand that. And I don't know exactly. There would be some negative parts to it and some positive parts to it. In a way, it was sort of a blessing being ignorant about the whole thing, and or naive about the whole thing to start off with. I think there was a certain bliss in it almost that that people might not have today. I let my parents know what was going on before my parents realized there were words for it. What if they had been more prepared with having gotten ideas from preachers and, you know, the news media or anything else, and gotten ideas that preconceived them against what I turned out to be? I don't know how that might have made a difference. And how they made... My mother, she's English, and the English are a lot more, even being conservative as she is, I think the English have a lot more tolerance for a wide variety of deviance, if you want to say that. I mean, look at English movies. There's a lot more sexually going on in them, a lot more titillation that's more accepted society-wise. We seem to be a lot more prudish in America than they are in England, so maybe it would have been the same as far as my parents. I don't know. But
do you ever think that, again, knowing what you know, what you have been through, do you think that, I don't want to say that your life would have been easier, do you think that you would have, I don't want this to seem repetitive, but like navigate the hoops that you've had to go through? I mean, like, not like coming out.
Well, I think I know what you're saying, and I think that, I think that it would have been easier than it was for us, because there are paths that people have already taken that we didn't. I mean, we were, of course, you know, if you're going through the woods and you have to pick your own trail, it's a lot slower and a lot harder to navigate the underbrush and everything else than it is to take a hike up on the Appalachian Trail where a lot of other people have walked before you.
I like that analogy. you've been on this trail,
mm-hmm,
for a while. I mean, you've seen a lot of the trees, a lot of the rocks. And now someone who has just figured out that they're gay or lesbian is now, they have just set foot on the path. What kind of advice would you give them? I mean, knowing everything that you've been through, you've lived in so many different places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've seen a lot. I mean, you've been a part of the MCC. You've seen the clubs, and I'm assuming not just Roanoke either, but...
Yeah.
What would you say to them? What would your advice be?
Don't ever, ever hate yourself. Don't ever let somebody make you do that to yourself.
In terms of your own life, do you ever feel like you did that for being gay? Do you ever...
I've been different since I was a little kid. I knew something was different about me. So sometimes I'm not real happy with myself, but it's not because of that. It's because of other things. I mean, I think we probably all go through that. But I remember when I was a really little kid, I wanted to be mistaken for a boy. Probably about the time I was about 4 years old. That's when I began to think I would like to be mistaken for a boy. I did not like having to wear dresses, which we had to wear to school. I liked it when someone thought that I was a boy. And I climbed trees and... I guess it was probably a little after the time I was 4 years old. Because actually, in kindergarten, I promised every boy in my kindergarten class that I would marry them. But shortly after that, I began to want to wear my brother's leftover clothes, you know, the ones that he outgrew. I would cut off his khakis and wear them around for shorts and stuff like that. And I remember in the eighth grade, one time we had a library. We went into the library to do a project with periodicals. We had to write a paper. And I remember looking through the periodicals. This would have been, 60, maybe 65. I can't remember exactly what. Yeah, 64, because 66 was 10th grade, so 9th grade would have been 65. So 8th grade would have been 64. And I remember going into the library, and I was just going through periodicals trying to find something that interested me. And I came across an article about someone, and I think it was maybe in Sweden or one of those countries, who had undergone a sex change operation. And I thought this was the most fascinating thing I'd ever read. But I had enough instinct to know that would not be the article to write about for class. So I found something else to write about. But I read every word in that article. And I used to go home from school and just talk to my mother. And just chat. She used to just like to fix dinner, and I would just sit there and chat, you know. And so I remember telling her about this article. And I remember saying that, you know, I found it comforting to actually know that when I became an adult, if I felt like I really wanted to be a boy, I could do it. That you could actually go out and do this. And my mother just listened. She never said a word. Anytime I talked to her about stuff, sometimes she would ask questions, but she never made any judgment on what I said or anything. And as I got older, I never felt like, you know, now that I know a lot about people who are transgender, they go through something that I've never experienced. I don't believe that I've ever felt the same way they do. So I don't believe I was ever transgender. But I do think that that's a commentary on the way females were treated. I mean, I remember my brother got to do chores outside, and I was expected to dust and clean and do the dishes and all this sort of stuff, me and my sister. And there was a definite gender division in the way when I was mistaken for a boy. I remember a man in the supermarket one time. I don't know where my sister was. She normally was always with my mother, but for some reason that day she was not. And I was in the supermarket with my mother, and somebody that mom hadn't run into in a long time saw her there, a man. And he said something to her, and then he started talking to me. And it was a perfectly normal conversation, you know, and I was just talking to him. I was still a little kid, you know, I wasn't a preteen or anything, I was still a kid. But I was just talking to him, and he said something to my mother about what a nice son I had, and she said, "Oh no, that's my oldest daughter." And he said, "Oh, of course." And then he started talking to me very patronizingly, you know. "What a pretty little girl you are. Do you like your dresses when you go?" You know, whatever he said. It was just, you know, I wanted to smack him, you know? I really did. Because he was treating me like a perfectly normal person before he discovered that I was a girl. And then he began treating me differently. And I think that that's a real... that I even went through feeling like that, I think, is a real commentary on the way women are treated in this society.
That's, I mean, that's absolutely true. There is a division of labor and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever feel like, I mean, you got treated differently, not only because you were a woman, but because you were a woman who liked women? I mean, I know I think I've asked.
Yeah. Well, I know. I mean, we've been treated terrible by some friends. We've had some real bad experiences with people we've known. We had a friend in our first apartment that we made friends with. She stayed friends with us for quite a few years and visited us in Lynchburg and stuff like that, but one day she moved to Charlottesville and she asked us to come and see her. I mean, this was an hour drive up 29, you know, to go to Charlottesville. So we drove all the way up to Charlottesville, got out of the car, found her house because we hadn't been there before. She'd recently moved there, got out of the car, went up to her house. She opened the door, we stepped into her house, and before she did anything else, I mean, we figured we were going to be there for a meal, you know, to visit, you know, this sort of stuff. And she said, "I just wanted you all to know, I want to live a traditional lifestyle, and I do not want to have you for friends anymore. I would like you to leave my house now." And we had to get back in our car and drive all the way back to Lynchburg. So, yes, we had experiences like that. People who... actually, sometimes it seems like more from people who knew us for a while than even strangers. Because most of the time we were really mistaken for sisters, I guess, because we're both short. We both had short hair. Some reason people mistook us for sisters a lot. Strangers would ask us, you know, "Oh, is that your sister?" And a lot of times we just go, "Yeah," because it's really, you know, what are you going to do?
It's true.
It's nobody's business if you don't want it to be. You're not obligated to come out to everybody you meet, you know, or every stranger on the street.
I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's your own life.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess I want to ask, we've asked you about your experiences in the past and how they would have changed. Now, and you've also given us advice. Now, if you were looking at yourself, like if you had to have a conversation with your past self, what would you tell yourself? You've told us what you would tell other people. What about you in particular?
Well, I think that women tend to have less earning power, and I missed an opportunity in my current job that I think I would... it really doesn't have anything except to do with being a woman. When I came here for this job from Memphis, when I was called to and was told that I could have this job, my soon-to-be boss asked me at the time, he said, "Are you fine with the salary?" Well, when I went for the interview, I was told that they had something like 80-some people applied for the job, and they were interviewing almost 40 of them. So I certainly didn't want to mess up anything about getting that job. I thought, if I say anything to him, what if he says, "Well, fine, we'll, you know, hire somebody else," you know, or whatever. But back in those days, I had worked for city governments you know, local governments, all of which had jobs that it didn't matter if you were male or female. If you had that job, there was a fixed salary for it. But with the state, your salary was negotiable on hiring. I had no way of knowing that. No way at all. And they were, I had 3 years of experience specifically doing the same job that I came here to do, plus 2 years of experience in a similar job that involved interpreting regulations. And when I was getting this job, they gave me a higher salary than what I had in Memphis. But the problem was, in Tennessee, there's no state tax. If you considered the salary that I was going to get moving to Virginia, and if you took away the fact that there was no state tax in Tennessee, it didn't end up really being a raise. I was really coming for about the same salary. If I could go back and tell myself anything, I would tell myself, ask for more money. Because after I came, they had hiring freezes, they had salary freezes for years and years and years and years. And it turned out that my boss had been told, because he went back there, they offered me a senior position for a salary that was way below the other person that I was working with, who was a man. And the Richmond office, I mean, he was beside himself, because he said, if I had known this is all the money I could have offered her, I would have hired her as a regular, you know, below that, so that she would have a chance to move up. So they hired me in the highest position that I could come into, with nowhere to go and no way to get any more money. And so it damaged my hiring, my earning potential for my entire career.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. They kept saying, well, he has more experience than you. He's worked here for however long, 4 years or 3 years, which wasn't really true. Because I'd been doing that job before coming there as long as he had. But that's the way they were in Richmond. My current boss went up to Richmond one day. I had no idea he was doing this. We went up there together because I was doing some training. And he went up to the personnel office. And he laid out some stuff in front of them and told them that they needed to give me some more money, and he got me more money. But when you consider all of those years that I didn't earn it, it hurt. And that's hurting us today, that I didn't get that earning power that I would have gotten.
It's awful.
It is.
Do you have any other experiences or advice you would like to give? I mean, in terms of
Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the things that we got asked, things like that when we did the presentation at the PFLAG meeting, long-term relationships, people tend to ask you. And I've had other people, like at work, there was a woman getting married, and a lot of the girls at work went out to take her out to lunch before she got married. Martha was invited, and we were sitting across the table from her, and she also asked, she said, what do you do to stay together? You know, what advice can you give somebody? And I think that it's hard sometimes when you're going through tough times, when you're in a relationship with somebody, to realize that nothing ever stays the same. Your relationship is going to ebb and flow and grow and sometimes seem to fall down. But if you really love the other person, you're going to get through those times that seem like you're going to wring each other's necks if you don't get away from each other. And I think that that's probably the advice I would give to somebody, is when you're in a relationship, when you find somebody that you really love and who really loves you. And relationships usually work out best, I think, for people who somehow are friends before, you know, they become lovers. I think having that friendship as a base part of your relationship, I think, makes a difference. And just realize that, you know, this is a person you've been through everything with. Don't throw it away. If you just hang around for a little while longer, things are going to change. Whatever is the problem, whatever is going on that's causing it to be a problem, is not going to last forever.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, we appreciate your time. Do you have any last thoughts or experiences you want to share?
Well, I just love this project. I love what's going on here. As far, we've gone on online and listened to some of the stories, and I think hearing people's stories is one of the greatest things that you can give to another person. I think that that's one of the things that will help people who are just realizing this about themselves, to hear stories about what other people have been through.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's one of the reasons we're so thankful for your participation. And I don't think I can thank you enough for sharing your story. But I have to say thank you again.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed this.
I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.